Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and you're listening or watching to the award-winning, globally ranked podcast show, The Leadership Enigma. Well, now you can find us on all the major podcast platforms and with over 250 videos now. Yes, I did say that, 250 videos on the YouTube channel. That is also worth subscribing to. Now, you know me well enough. I will continuously and curiously delve into the human being behind the incredible, the audacious, the extraordinary, the disruptive, the innovative, and sometimes the inspiring and the funny too. I want to know what actually makes people tick. So today's episode is part and parcel of our CEO series. Why would someone want to be a CEO? One of the CEOs that I spoke to when we were on location said that it was full of unrealistic expectations. So why would anyone do it? What's the expectation? What's the reality of the role? What's the first 100 days look like? What are the ups and what are the downs? What's the payback? So, you do not want to miss this particular episode. Come back to me where I have the wonderful Tom Monahan, who's the CEO of Heidrick & Struggles. Yes, I work at Heidrick & Struggles. So let's hope this isn't a career-limiting episode. Don't miss this. Come back to me just after the break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Tom, it's a huge welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm great, Adam. How are you?
I am very good. Firstly, you're in the UK and you've decided to come into the studio. What do you think?
It's fabulous. As you and I have talked about, in all roles there are things you have to do and things you get to do. And this definitively falls in the things you get to do. We are... You and I and our colleagues at Heidrick, along with our clients, are co-creating what it means to be a leader. And you know, this is we're kind of catching an evolving dynamic and having a conversation around what we're seeing, how we're seeing leadership change, how we're seeing that grow in impact is really exciting.
Well, we're going to delve into all things leadership. That really is the sweet spot for this show. And I was very, very keen to get you into the studio. I know that you'd listened to us, flattered you've listened to a few podcasts. You might remember, do you remember you sent me an email and you said we were doing, it was a Heidrick Business Academy event running. Mm-hmm. And actually they were sending you some materials because you were going to open it up. And then mm-hmm. you actually sent me an email and you said, look, I'm actually getting your podcast now as homework in preparation for the business. Do you remember that?
So it was, again, good homework.
Good
not,
homework.
Not, it's the sort of homework you want to do, not the homework you have to do.
Which is great. Okay. This is going to be part and parcel of the CEO series. And it's always, I think, humbling and flattering every time I talk to every single guest who takes the time to come in or just spend the time talking about what they do and how they do it. So I didn't really give any CV in relation to what you've done over the years. So if you were going to give that potted history CV to someone, what would you say to someone?
Sure. You know, I've had the privilege of serving in a couple of different leadership roles.
Yep.
Usually in businesses that combine, you know, the first ingredient is always exceptional people. And then supporting them with great content, great data, great technology. You know, I joke that I'm a bartender, but I'm a bartender in a bar where there's only really three ingredients to the value we create for clients.
Yeah.
One is fantastic elite professionals. Second is data and intellectual property that they create or can leverage. And third is technology that supports all of that in coming to life for clients.
So what was the pull of coming to Heidrick & Struggles? A NASDAQ listed global consultancy. What was the attraction?
You know, what I like to say is I came by my deep interest in leadership authentically. I didn't start saying, "Gee, I want to go be a student of leadership or support the great work of people who make leadership happen." I began with an interest in corporate performance. What distinguishes great companies, high-performing organizations, fantastic institutions from merely average ones.
Right.
And what are the biggest drivers of great performance? And no matter how you take on that problem, how you tear it down, you look for explanatory variables of A versus B or outlier performance, invariably it comes down to the fact that leadership, great leadership, the right people in the right roles, leading in the right way, is the single most important driver of high-performing organizations. You can look at any other characteristic, and it comes down. You know, we talk all the time about this. These are who questions, not what questions. You can have two companies that have the exact same strategy, allocate capital in the exact same way, and one will significantly outperform the other because of the leaders in place and the culture they create. And so the chance to work among people who practice that every day and maybe on balance help us grow a little faster, have a little more client impact was just too exciting to pass up.
Okay. I always tend to go backwards to go forwards, Tom. So help me with this. Where did the fascination with corporate performance start to come from? Was it when you were yourself in leadership roles, or was it something that intrigued you earlier on?
I was probably a student of it before I was, if you look, go back to a prior company I had the privilege of leading.
Yes.
Company called CEB, which our entire reason for being was taking a look at great performance and great performance at the company level, great performance at the organizational level, and also great performance at the functional level. What characterizes a great company? What characterizes a great marketing department? And really trying to understand, what was, working backwards from the outcomes. Who at the company level grew faster, was more profitable, whatever outcome you wanted to look at, and then continuing to peel back that onion to say what explained that. And then you could take it down to the functional level. What makes a great operations organization? What makes a great customer success organization? What makes a great marketing organization? What makes a great finance organization? And again, you set an objective and then you peel back to say, well, what accounts for it? And invariably, the answer, there were certainly things people could do. You could choose technology A versus technology B. You could choose market A versus market B. But even when you hold all that constant, there were companies, organizations, departments that outperformed others. And that was where you saw almost the residual, which is leadership, the most powerful explanatory variable. So I got interested in it coming in first as an analyst and student, and then over time, becoming a practitioner, but you can see the leverage and look, we do this work every day, right? So we know that you can measure the impact of great leadership in two ways. Well, when we work with a client, either we say we might help them find a new leader for a group or a company, or we might take a leadership team and get them organized and aligned and performing at a much higher level. It's not only the performance. You can look on paper and say a year later, 2 years later, 5 years later, look at the great work we did based on earnings or whatever. But it's also the transformative impact of great leadership on individuals, on people. I joke, but when we you've been subjected to my stump speech on this, but it's not only the great performance that we co-create with clients. It's the fact that when people are well led, when people are in organizations that are thriving, they themselves are happier. It's they know why they're doing the work they do. They know how to do the work they do better. They're more excited. My stump speech goes on for hours. I'm like, and then they go home and they're better members of their community, and they're better siblings and children and parents, all that. And that's an overly extreme. But one of the things I love about the study of leadership and the co-creation of great leadership with our clients is it not only has incredible financial returns, it has great human returns.
I have so many questions. We were always destined to meet like this, I think, mm-hmm. Tom, when you talked about the focus that you have on leadership. I'm going backwards again a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Where's this insatiable curiosity that seems to be within you coming from? Can you track that for me?
I don't know. You and I've talked about the fact that leaders are sort of magpies, right? magpies.
Let's talk about this.
In the animal kingdom for building their nest out of whatever they can find, right? And I think most leaders go looking either within them, within themselves or attributes that they possess, which can be put into service of their leadership style, or they go looking for, think about it as tracks they can sample from the scene. Yeah. Other people do that works really well. They'll incorporate into their own song, if you will. But I think I've always been a curious person, and therefore have incorporated it into how I work with people. Just, in some respect, I probably was the really annoying 3-year-old who never got out of the why phase. Yeah, I just stayed on the why. Maybe a stunted growth of some sort, because...
Well, it's still a powerful question, isn't it?
Having a little bit of a beginner's mind from time to time to say, well, why do we do it that way? And once in a while, the answer is, we've got some proof that it works. Sometimes the answer is because we've done it this way since 1842. just asking unearths the opportunity to take a look at organizations, at dynamics, at opportunities in new ways.
Yeah.
Well, I think I always was curious, and I think it therefore sort of brought it with me as a way of working.
Did you come from a family that was corporate focused?
No.
So kind of what background did you come from?
Mom was a teacher, yep. So probably that inspired.
Oh, well, there's a curiosity.
That probably inspired some curiosity. My dad was in public service.
Yes.
We had a family business on my mother's side, still have one, which was actually a carnival. And that sounds like the front end of a joke, but it's a terrific. It's a great business to be in because talk about the. You kind of roll into town and make people happy.
Right. So when you say carnival, you are talking about a proper... Carnival.
Yeah.
Oh, well, tell me a little bit more about that. Wow.
I had the chance to work in it a little bit growing up. And
yeah.
From a practical leadership standpoint, it's a fascinating space because you have both... Think about the games that you'd play. That's more of a services business, right? Those are exceptional people who interact with people to say, hey, come play this game versus that game, right. Come do this. And then you have think about the rides, they're almost more like manufacturing, right? They're capital equipment,
yeah.
They have to be safely maintained, properly taken care of. You can, and so it's an interesting business in that you have lots of stuff going on for, it's more complex than some multinationals because you've got very different things going on. So it's a great, it was the first business I sort of knew of.
Yeah.
Grew
up around it.
Grew up around it, right? And so you back to the magpie thing, you take a little bit of what you saw work there and
yes.
And try to implement it.
Well, this is where the detective in me comes out, yeah. Tom, because I'm hearing about mom was a teacher. Maybe there's that learning and the curiosity. Mm-hmm. You said your dad was in public service. Mm-hmm. So there's a service element there. Mm-hmm. And then from the carnival, that's quite a human offering, isn't it? Because of the interaction with yep. people and highly entrepreneurial. So I'm starting to see what is it you took mm-hmm. almost from your magpie status mm-hmm. that suddenly became the leader that you turned into. At what point did you start to maybe consciously draw from experiences in life or things that you'd learned and said, this is going to be part and parcel of who I am? As a leader, did that ever become conscious, or did you just, in some ways, organically start to build that nest?
There's something kind of funny where
we've hit a theme now.
Yeah, there's something kind of interesting, and I'll try to capture it. But I don't know when this light bulb went off in my head. Probably later than it should have. But you start thinking about, and any organization, and you think about all the different ways you can allocate resources and all the different resources you have stewardship over.
Yep.
The best thing about people is they're kind of the only thing inside an organization you suddenly realize that can be worth a lot more next year than this year. This is an absolute... state-of-the-art microphone. It will never be worth more than the day it was purchased.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 5 years from now, there'll be a better one. And some, there'll be a conversation about, does this need to be upgraded, or can we get one more year about it? I don't know when, I don't know enough about great microphones to know when that is.
But it's depreciating from the moment you buy it.
Yeah, and every piece of software sort of that you install in your company, by definition, at some point in the future, someone invents the better platform. And then you're looking at it saying, boy, do we need to upgrade that? If you do your job with people, you know, they can grow faster than the organization. They can grow in capacity. They can grow. They can have multiplicative impacts on people. And at some point, as a leader, you wake up and you're like, "Wow, that's pretty cool." Like, of all the ways I can spend my time helping my, you know, helping the human capital that I have the chance to influence compound its value, really is huge. It's exciting because you're mentoring people. You hope you're half the time you're just helping them find the resources they need to be successful. Often you don't have the answer, but you might know who has the answer. And you get excited about that and say, okay, I want to help that happen. I want to, the title of the podcast is absolutely correct in that, leadership is an enigma, but there are, you can make progress on it. So you start to look and say, well, boy, how do I help people grow? How do I, it can be one of the crass questions, how do I get more out of people? But then once you say, well, it's not just about getting more out of people, it's about getting more out of people and having them be twice as valuable and twice as energized and twice as committed next year at this time. And that's when you start to say, well, how do I do that? Who's done that for me? What have I seen? Who else does it? You start that magpie process of looking around to say, well, what can I draw from that's part of me?
Yeah.
And what can I try out and steal and borrow and adapt that I've seen other people do to be successful? And I think working backwards from that insight, which is, wow, if I do this right, the people I'm working with can do even more next year. We'll be able to accomplish more as an organization next year. They'll have impact on the people around them, and the value of what we collectively do can go up pretty meaningfully. And so once that penny dropped for me, I said, oh, that's something worth spending time on.
Well, I agree with you. And let me just ask you a question on the kind of this magpie theme, because I quite like the idea of this nest. Has there been a skill or a capability that you found that you've drawn down on a lot in your life? It's something that's always helped you in relation to either a North Star, or it's just helped you navigate some of the challenges. So I'll give you an example. Yeah. Curiosity has always been, I think, a big theme for me. It helped me as a trial lawyer. I think it kept me safe as an operational police officer. And I think in the work that I do, that we do now, it's highly useful just to be curious all the time. Is there a standout for you that's something that's always helped you?
When I sort of, read 360s or look at feedback, one thing that comes back again and again is framing conversations, framing problems. Like what, not solving them, but being able to say, okay, what exact problem are we trying to solve?
Yeah.
You know, let's get really specific around what are we talking about, so we can channel all the collective energy of a group into solving this problem. You know, what is, think about, it's ironic. In almost every type of situation I've been in, whether it be in business services, sort of data and analytics, even leading university.
Yes.
Fast starts matter. Just think about a university. A student who gets off to a fast start is much more likely to thrive. A client who has a great first experience is much more likely to grow across time. Taking that insight, which is a data point, and you dimension it out a little bit, going really deep into what exactly are we solving for here? Is it they don't have time for us? Is it we're competing with time? Is it it's hard to figure out how do they, but getting the collective energy and brain power of a team to focus in on the highest value part of a problem or opportunity seems to be a thing that that people value. And there's probably two parts to that. One is making sure that we're, misquote Einstein here, but there's some quote that says something like, you know, if I'm given a problem to solve, I spend 50 minutes on defining the problem and 10 minutes solving it. And I think to some degree, if there's a thing I spend a lot of time thinking about is saying, well, you know, before we jump to doing, let's actually, what problem are we exactly trying to solve? How will it look different a year from now if we really break the back of this problem? What would twice as good look like? Done right, I'm not saying I always do it right by any stretch of the imagination, but done right, you get a whole bunch of people working together on a very specific problem as opposed to ideating. You know, what would it look like to create a solution that absolutely in perpetuity was three times as valuable for this client need as anything else? And that's a very different question than what can we do for clients, right? Because that's a very long, that can be a long conversation. So I think that's I joke sometimes the most important job a leader has is the shrink ray in their tool belt to say most huge problems have a highly leveraged part that really requires some focus.
Yes.
Our most huge opportunities have some very specific thing we have to get 100% right. So if we put our energy there, it will have huge value. And it's one of those places that can help galvanize people and right. It helps people, you know, and again, I wish I could say, and I'm usually the one to solve it. I think the data would suggest I'm actually just about never the one to solve it, but I create the conditions sometimes for a solution.
Well, this is interesting. I mean, only yesterday, Tom, I had a CEO of a global company say that whatever the size of the problem, he thinks it must be able to be solved by five people in 5 weeks. The right people.
Yep. That's but interesting.
It's about, again, that framing and that and that kind of that focus, which is what you're talking about. So is one of your superpowers that ability to focus people to create the frame so that we're not trying to boil the ocean. We're actually focusing on the right thing. To your point, from the Einstein point, it's actually what is the question we're trying to solve?
Yep.
And then do we have the right people trying to solve it and then go? Have I summed that up?
Yeah, sum it up, and maybe to some degree, you know, and there's probably something about the old Bob Rubin thing, right? Does it need to be solved now?
Right.
Right. Or is this, you know, do we want to take the time? You know, is this, because I find there are problems where you say, gee, maybe it is 5 weeks, maybe it's 10 weeks because we have to get data. We have to go talk to 20 clients to figure out what's going on. We really need to understand it. Or it can be, we got to come, like Lauren Michaels, you know, the person who conceived and still leads Saturday Night Live always says the show doesn't go on because it's ready. The show goes on because it's Saturday Night Live Saturday night at 11:30.
Right.
And to some degree, is this one of those problems where with whatever set of resources we've got, we need to make a decision?
Yes.
Or is it one where we say, you know, the caliber of decision goes up materially if we can obtain this information
right. And
then have a conversation? You know, I forget who said this, but you know, I'm also a believer. I think it was Jim Clark, who's a legendary tech CEO, used to always say, you know, if we're going with opinions to solve a problem, I'm the CEO, let's use mine. But if we have data or client feedback, maybe we could also use that. So asking yourself, you know, is this one where, you know, more time helps us? What one where more time hurts us? But I think whether it's a skill or a discipline or just a way of working, I don't know. I don't know that I'm uniquely capable of it. I know that teams say, hey, that when you do that, that's helpful.
Okay. So there's an element there definitely of a framing. I heard a phrase actually from another client. I don't know whether you've heard it, HIPPO, which was the highest paid person's opinion in a room at the time would be, and you alluded to that in relation to someone's opinion. So how's your approach in your role as CEO? You're going to be leading people who know more than you, especially in an organization such as Heidrick. You have specialists in so many disciplines.
By definition.
So you come in with a couple of thousand of these incredible specialists all over the world across disciplines. How do you approach that to kind of focus them, galvanize them, as you say, have a view, but also leverage the talent that's there? Because some people are nervous about how do you lead experts? Because I've always said you don't need to be a pilot to run an airline company. You don't need to be a doctor to run a healthcare business. Yeah. It might help in some way, but you don't have to be.
Yeah, no, it's right. And I think there's I'd almost flip it around, which is I had at a prior organization I joined when we were very, very small, and we grew, and that was exciting. And I had to, I went through probably a phase as we grew of being the person who kind of from time to time was the expert in how we did things. And that really, I had to almost what I was an expert in is the way we used to do things, not the way we should do things going forward. And I could actually feel that I was sort of getting in the way. So I think, you know, what is your job in leading experts? And by the way, I'll just as a side note, most everyone who moves from manager to leader is leading. Think about the number of CFOs who are tax experts and accounting experts and treasury experts and M&A experts. There's limits. By definition, you're always going to have things you've done and things you haven't done.
Yeah.
And every day that goes by, you're out of date on every dimension of that, right? Because whatever the latest and greatest was when you did the job is no longer the latest and greatest
and,
today.
And AI must be compounding that as well.
AI compounds that, right? Absolutely.
And none of us can keep up with that exponential learning.
So what tools do you bring to leading experts? You try to listen, try to figure out what, how do we define impact? Let's say our business, how do we define impact and success with clients? And what are, the ways we can do more of that and have bigger impact and start to get a sense of what, leverage points there are that collectively lift the whole. I'm not going to make anyone better at what they do, but I can make us better at leveraging the collective ability of the firm and make, the other thing you think about in leading a people organization is you want to be the place where the best people come to do their best work. What characterizes that environment?
It's a culture conversation.
Yeah, it's a culture conversation. How does it feel to work there? Do you have the right tools to do your job? All those things, right?
Yeah. You said something to me, I'm feverishly making notes here, Tom, as you can see. That's the trial lawyer in me coming out now as well. You talked about a fast start.
Yep.
So let me ask you some questions about what it's like to prepare for a new CEO role. Mm-hmm. Because I was one of a couple of thousand people who were expectant in relation to, there's a new CEO coming into the business. So I remember chatting to an amazing CEO who's the CEO of Kenya Bank, one of our clients, who said, the role is full of unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. And he approaches the role with huge humility, and there's also great opportunity. So it's a little bit of a paradox to it. What's the mindset that you had in preparing to start the role at Hydrogen Struggles, where you think to yourself, I'm going to be introduced, I'm brand new, I'm going to have to unveil myself in some ways to everyone, not just to the external market. What's going through your mind where you're the new kid on the block, but with a huge amount of experience? Where do you start?
Yeah, it's an interesting, we're a public company, so you can develop some hypotheses, questions you want to ask or think about, which is, you're recognizing many leadership assignments don't have sort of 20 years worth of financials you can go through. And whether an accurate predictor of what you're about to find, it at least is, it's an aged treasure map, if you will. It's sort of, there's something there. So you can start there, just get a picture of it. Making sure, probably the most, Will Rogers famously said, it ain't the things we don't know that get us in trouble. It's things we know that just ain't so.
Right.
And so, you know, making sure you really come to it not presuming you know anything about the work, and being okay to be a the humility point is absolutely right, because you have to be almost courageously humble to say, I have to admit, I don't really understand this. I have to admit, I don't, can you take me a level deeper? Can you slow it down? I don't know what the acronym means.
Yes.
And there's both value to me from asking those questions, but once in a while people will say, you know, now that I think about it, there may be a different way to, you know, if you really are just creating space for people to share with you, sometimes they'll create insight by virtue of, you know, looking, you know, kind of stepping outside their work and looking back at it with me.
Yes.
You can create some value. But I think the first thing is that humility to almost be courageously curious and to risk looking silly and to risk, you know, try not to read the thought bubbles over people's head, which is this person's kind of a dope because they don't understand, you know, really what we do, and they're theoretically a grown up. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to learn as much about and I had a little bit of a cheat sheet at Heidrick because I had been a client.
Right. Well, that's going to help.
But yeah, there's also one of the most dangerous things a CEO can do is be a focus group of one.
Right.
That's even worse than the HIPAA principle. Now it's, I'm the highest paid person in the room and I'm the client voice, which is, I think Tom Murray and I, as we step into our leadership roles, were really careful to remember, though we had been clients, we had been but two of literally thousands of clients,
right,
with thousands of situations.
Not the perspective.
Yeah, yeah. But making sure you actually get a little, if you sort of look at what you're probing for as a new CEO, is you have some group you serve and a set of needs they have. Like, what are they trying to get done? What do they want to do? And you got a whole group of talented people who are trying to meet those needs. And you happen to have a current set of ways of doing that, but you almost want to pull all the way back and say, well, you know, what a client's, what, you know, what, an easy, let's take our search business as an easy example. A client comes to us and says, you know, hey, I need a new CFO, or I need a new chief marketing officer, I need a new chief revenue officer. That's not what they need, right? We, you know, when you start talking with our teams and our clients, what they're saying is, I need to grow faster. I need to grow more scalably. I need, you know, there's some broader need, or I need, you know, some, and I think that is probably the second. The first step is just really understanding what we do. The second is trying to get really close to not just how clients use us, but what needs they have. And how they happen to meet them today, because there may be other things we can do for them. There may be ways that there are other things they use besides us to get those done. So spending time on that's really important. I think just really understanding, you know, both how clients' needs manifest in our system. What do they buy? What do they use? But also just what are they trying to get done in their job? So I think those are two disciplines. I think a third discipline is just trying to keep beginners' mind throughout, just, you know, and always being able, my joke is the CEO is always, you know, to some degree, the ambassador from reality, you know, to the company. Your job is to, as much as is humanly possible, try to help the organization ingest external perspective and act upon that, to be a, you know, to sort of say, well, here's what's really happening in the world, and how do we adapt to that? Most organizations don't get to make the weather. They have to respond to and be built for the weather they encounter. And making sure you're always keeping an outside, you know, what's going on in the outside world, because we're going to have to thrive no matter what comes our way. And the fourth thing you do is you try to get a sense of just, you know, I think like any, Oscar Wilde said, you know, experience is the name we give our mistakes. One mistake I have definitely made,
yes,
is making sure I understand what makes, particularly in people businesses, but I think all business are people businesses,
yes.
What makes them tick, and what's the cathedral we're trying? I always say, look, work is mostly about lugging rocks up a hill, but having a really good clear picture of the cathedral we're building actually
right.
makes lugging the rocks a little bit more interesting. The mistake I've made has been, I can safely assume no one cares. Well, save our finance team, but even our finance team at the end of the day doesn't really care.
Certain realities yeah. none of us
yeah.
can escape.
Yeah, yeah. Does our earnings per share next year, is that something that should greet everyone every day on their screen?
Yep.
No. Does our stock price? No. Those are lagging indicators to some degree.
Well, they're historic, aren't they?
The score takes care of itself if you play the game really well consistently. But trying to figure out what it is that does motivate people. If that, because I've made the mistake of, like everyone who took a company public in the early aughts, there was a screen with the stock price on, and then you realize, that goes down
yeah.
too. And people aren't attached to it. So you start saying, what is it that we try to attach to collectively? What's a definition of success that kind of calls out the best in all of us?
Yeah.
And how do we measure that? And at an organization like Heidrick, it's that impact on clients. And how would we not only measure that individually day in, day out, but what might it collectively look like? And if we did that even better every day for the next 5 years, what would that look like? Because that would motivates people, would have great impact on our brand. But trying to figure out what unifies an organization and pulls it forward, because I've tried at earlier stages, I picked things that didn't actually call out people's best work, that didn't bring the best culture forward.
Here's an interesting one. You mentioned earnings per share, stock price, mm-hmm. and we can never get away from the financial realities. So if you're running an ExCom meeting or a board meeting, or you're in a mm-hmm. board meeting, you've probably got lots and lots of data, but it's all historic.
Yep.
How do you help keep the organization focused on the future? Because sometimes we don't know what the future has to hold, because it's pretty bonkers right now, Tom.
Yep.
So how do you manage that balance between, fine, I've got historic data or historic financial data. How do you keep us moving forward and helping us serve our clients moving forward, where they're all actually saying, what on earth is going to happen to this world?
Sure. And just to put a fine point, we've talked about this internally. Let's go back 5 years ago today.
Yeah.
Let's imagine you and I are sitting in the ExCom or a board meeting of a client, and they're thinking about what context they're going to have to lead through as an organization. And let's grade whatever they put on that piece, whatever's on that slide.
Yeah.
Versus what actually happened. One company in 10,000 may have had global pandemic, but probably not.
No.
Then you look and say, if there were a global pandemic, would I suspect that the next two problems I would encounter as an organization would be scarcity of talent? I would assume that, the biggest problem with the global pandemic is we'd be in a recession and then a depression, we'd be in a 5-year depression. Turns out that actually we had a massive boom faster than anyone expected. So huge scarcity of talent became the next problem. And then inflation, which no one had seen at this scale for decades, and throw in geopolitical, the 5 years just from 5 years ago today. And if you think about a leadership assignment or a leadership team construction, that's a reasonable increment of time. Almost every contextual factor that some team would have anticipated would have proven inconsequential relative to what actually happened, right?
Right.
That we'd have to set out to invent new ways of working. Then having done that, we'd be left to say, okay, do we go back? Do we go forward? What's the reconstruction of work?
How do we succeed in that kind of environment?
Yeah. I think, so Again, I'm a big, I'll give you an easy example. We had a board meeting last week, and I'm a big fan of, two of our colleagues brought in three clients, and we had a panel discussion live in the boardroom.
Right.
Not because we certainly have a slide that says here's where we think the world is going, but just getting clients talking in front of a board because you hear things and it's real and it's a stimulus that. You know, clients cease to be numbers on pages. They start to be human beings confronting real problems. I think that's really important. And we also talk about the fact that in an era where the what's are hard to predict, the who's and the how's become, because if you can't predict the next five, and we now have a lot of evidence, our ability to predict the future starting 5 years ago today was pretty poor. What ends up mattering is who you're putting in what seats. So you think a lot about, am I building leaders and leadership teams capable of navigating an unpredictable environment?
Right.
So I think about that as a really important thing. And you have to have some hypotheses. You do have to...
A working hypothesis. Yeah, like working detectives, they have to have a working hypothesis, which could be... proved wrong,
and be very comfortable with the idea that when the future doesn't conform, you can adjust.
I spoke to Gary Rich, who was the CEO of WD-40, so oil in a can, quite iconic product, and we had a great chat. And he was stepping down after 26 years as chairman and CEO. And I said, Gary, what's it meant to you to be in that role? And he said, it's my apprenticeship in leadership. Again, a huge amount of humility of the opportunity that he had, and how he was going to leverage that learning going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So putting the financial metrics, which are getting important, but to one side, what's this going to do for you, Tom, as Tom? Not just Tom the CEO, but just Tom, the human being. What is this role going to give you if this goes to plan?
Yeah, I mean,
when this goes to plan, I should say. So,
I mean, it's I am excited when you can find ways as a team and an organization to scale our impact. And that doesn't mean we're not a hyperscaler. We're not gonna flatten the forest and put a massive data center and just keep adding blades. It's not what we do. But if the way you scale a people business is you create situations which attract great people, create situations which let those people do more of great work, and reflect and say, I'm having more client impact, every year. Because of the culture, because of the tools I've got to do my job, because of intellectual property we co-created together that I can get some leverage out of.
Right.
So I hope thing one, we find ways to scale the collective impact of the great people. And we pay it forward by continuing to replicate that, continuing to attract great people, grow them, enable them to be successful. I think personally, it was Descartes who said, knowledge is like a ball expanding in space, where what you know is inside the balloon, but the surface area is what you don't know. So the more you know, the more you don't know. I hope my balloon gets fuller because I have this chance to work with all these great people working on all these really interesting client problems.
Yeah,
and I hope. At the end of it, I say, wow, there's a whole lot of problems that things that it's only opened my eyes to things I don't yet know enough about. So I'll have an opportunity to kind of stay curious. And I think you want, I gotta be honest with you, you want to laugh a lot. Like work should be, ultimately, this is great work. This is great work to do. It attracts great people. In some really pedestrian sense, you want to say we had incredible client impact and we actually had some fun doing it. We had fun with the clients. We had fun with each other. We could laugh at our mistakes, learn and grow from them. To be around people who do this work is a privilege, and to just not lose sight of myself, just what a privilege it is to learn from every colleague, because they're doing really interesting work. They're working on really important stuff for clients, and to just find some joy in that. It's the ultimate, the kids when they're teens are talking about first world problem, right? The idea that, whatever. And this is the ultimate first world problem, right? Which is that whatever's going wrong in a day at Heidrick & Struggles is within the context of exceptional people doing insanely important work for some of the most interesting organizations in the world. Whatever's going wrong, you got to remember it's within that context and find some joy in just that I get to see that work up close.
I had a mentor. I always tell this story because it's why I'm passionate about leadership. That's what drives me. He always said to me, the children of the people you lead know your name. Mm-hmm. In what context is up to you. You're in London, so you're going to be coming into the London office, I'm sure, and I'm sure you're traveling around the world and meeting
fabulous new London office.
New London office, which is marvelous. Here's an unfair question for you that I've asked other leaders. Is you come into the office, you walk into a lift, suddenly meet lots of people who work for you. They're all part of the company. What is it you hope they say about you when you get out the lift?
It's a great question. I think you want to, I hope they say, gosh, he was genuinely curious about me, about what I do, why I'm, I hope that, I hope accessible comes up, but I hope, it doesn't always, we have a ground floor office, so it's a very short lift trip.
It is, that's right. It's a very short trip.
But I hope, and it's and that I'll be honest, I'm an introvert by nature, so that is not second nature. So I have to really force myself to say, let me make sure I ask people, what are you working on? What's exciting you right now? How'd you get here? Why are you doing this work versus other work? But I hope what someone says he's curious. And I've talked about curiosity is a leadership value we share, and then about me, as a person. Yeah. I think that's what I hope they would say.
Okay, let me pull this to a close, Tom. With one last question, and we'll have a bit of fun as well. What's the best piece of leadership advice that you've ever given or received?
Best piece of leadership. It's a long list of great leadership.
Floats to the surface for you.
It's funny. And it's sort of the hard thing I'm trying to do right now is, the situation, whatever I happen to be dealing with today, it dredges up like whatever.
Correct.
But I think it's a little bit of the version of the lift question, which is, my 10th meeting of the day is the only time that person will interact with me. It's my 10th meeting. It's there, and that can be with investors, it can be with journalists, it can be with team members, it can be whatever. But just remembering that that is, the best piece of leadership advice I've ever gotten actually came from a somewhat inebriated aunt of the bride at a wedding who said, anything, because it was a beautiful wedding, and I said, wow, this is really spectacular. She said, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And there's a little bit of that if I'm not bringing myself, if I'm not energized about the meeting, why is it on my calendar, right? And that's less about calendar management. It's more about, hey, this is how I've chosen to spend my time. I need to be my best self in that meeting. I'll give you the moment I got that advice was, I was running a prior public company.
Yep.
You're constrained by financial regulation that I have to, if I meet with you first thing in the morning and I meet with someone else last thing in the afternoon, I can't tell you different things. Reg FD says, fair disclosure says, I have to tell the same story to everybody. And it gets pretty boring to tell the same story to 10 different people. But it's total luck of the draw that somebody got me first and someone got me last that day. And
their first time.
Yeah, it's still their first time. It's my one time to influence their thinking and just making sure I remember that. Because again, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. If it's worth spending time on, it's worth doing and allocating real energy and resource to it. I think that has been helpful to me. Again, a natural introvert. By the end of the day, when I answered a question about quarterly tax rate progression for the fifth time, yeah. It's like, oh boy. But just making sure you're there, you're present in the moment, you're honoring the person, and you're committing yourself fully to that moment. It sounds horribly zen, but there's some truth.
Well, which is why I'm glad you agreed to come into the studio and have this conversation. Now, let me ask you this 30-second quick fire round. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. So you decide. Train or plane?
Depends where I'm going.
Okay. Well, cook or do the dishes?
Cook.
Vacation or staycation, Tom?
I'm a vacation.
All right. Funny story or one-liner?
I really love stories.
Yeah, me too. I'll agree with you on that one. I have a owe money or owe a favor.
I actually like owing favors because not just the opportunity to be of service is important.
Okay, time machine or magic wand? Told you these would be bizarre.
I definitely a time machine.
Okay, speeding ticket or parking fine?
Parking fine.
Okay. Air guitar or air drums? Ooh, interesting one.
The closest I've come to athletic greatness is at a brief moment in time at the 2016 Rio Olympics. I played the air bongos with such zest. I made the bongo cam. So that's the bongos. That's my Olympic career.
Well, there you go. I'm going to have to change that completely, aren't I? American football or soccer? Oh, that's unfair,
that's
isn't it?
That's American.
Oh, is it? Okay, fair enough. Traveling east or traveling west?
Yeah.
You're going to say it depends on the starting point, right?
It depends a little on the starting point, although I do, there is something fun about traveling west because of time, right? So you're a little bit like, you feel like you're stealing time a little bit sometimes.
Getting some back. Listen, Tom, thanks very much. I hope you've had some fun coming into the studio and chatting on the Leadership in Inc. Has this been good?
It's been great.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.